Green Visions on KUMD is a KUMD production to encourage green thinking and green actions. Green Visions is made possible by the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future. Joining us on the phone this morning is Dr. Alexis Grindy. She is a research program manager, a wildlife ecologist, and she does work that many of us think we would love to do or at least assist with. She works with birds, and therefore her work is of great interest, of course, to fans of Laura Erickson's For the Birds and fans of Northland Morning, where we talk about these kinds of issues a lot. Alexis, thanks so much for joining us this morning. It's great to have you with us.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about your work. One of the things, I guess, that Laura has talked about quite recently, and that I, as a super, super beginning birder, have heard people talk about, is that there used to be, for example, evening grosbeaks everywhere, and then there weren't for years and years and years, decades, and now are evening grosbeaks making a comeback? Is this the kind of, are these the kinds of things that your work focuses on?
Yes, definitely. We have several different research projects that track different bird populations and monitor them over space and time. And yeah, the evening grosbeaks is very exciting, and hopefully we'll see a lot of them around throughout the whole year. But they're one of many species that actually sort of come and go depending on food availability and whether the habitat conditions are right for them. And so we sort of see sometimes these boom and bust cycles, but it's very exciting when they come back in these large numbers.
Yeah, the boom times are really exciting. One of the other things that I guess I had lost sight of living up here and being a person of a certain age is that at one point bald eagles were critically endangered. And up here, I guess we're a little bit blasé. It's like, oh, maybe I didn't see an eagle today. because we do see them so often. So there definitely are some success stories to talk about.
Yes, definitely. The bald eagle and a lot of raptor populations in general have had great success since the 1970s and have increased, especially in states like Minnesota and a lot of the northern states. There is a time, and one of the great things about my job is I get to talk to the public about birds. And there is that generation that remembers never seeing bald eagles. And now, you know, you drive up and down 35 and you see several of them on any given day. And it's wonderful. It's so majestic. And their populations were low because of DDT, which was a pesticide that was pretty prevalent in the 1960s and 70s, and it weakened their eggshells. And once we started taking the actions and really making bird conservation a priority, we started to see those populations come back. And it's not just good for those birds, but for the environment in general.
One of the, I guess I have to say that after almost 30 years of listening to Laura's program, that probably 98% of what I know about birds or bird-related issues comes from listening to Laura's program. So if I reference her program a lot, it's because that's kind of my only frame of reference at this point. I have to do more reading and more research on my own. But I'm wondering what your sense is of, just over the course of your career, how have you seen people's attitudes change, develop, evolve from what to what when it comes to birds? Because it seems as though in some ways we're less concerned, but in other ways maybe we're getting to have more access to information and people are more encouraged to try to get it right. What's your sense of that?
Yeah, I think you're right. There has been a culture of where birders were just really interested in seeing birds or species lists, but I do think there's a lot of science that's coming out now that's really sort of warning us about the peril that a lot of bird populations are in. For example, a few years ago, there was a study published in Science that showed there was nearly 3 billion fewer bird species in the 1970s, birds, than there were that there are today than there were in the 1970s. And so we've seen population declines of species across the board, forest birds, wetland birds, grassland birds, and really common backyard birds as well. And that's concerning, and we've been watching it, but there's fewer species, I think, that are really plummeting, like the bald eagle, but we're seeing this slow, gradual decline. And since that article came out, we've been really focused on trying to create actionable steps so that we can increase the awareness of the need to conserve birds. And specifically, a lot of our research focuses on informing and improving habitat considerations for a lot of our partner agencies, such as the Minnesota DNR and the U.S. Forest Service.
When I'm traveling out west in Minnesota, I missed an opportunity when I was out there a couple of weeks ago to photograph a pheasant, and I still have a dream, because I have tiny, tiny little modest dreams of getting a good photograph of a pheasant. And my dad grew up out there. I remember him talking about hunting pheasant out there. And somebody remarked to me, well, yeah, because their species is, or their, excuse me, their habitat is prairie, and there's so little habitat left in some of these areas. When you face the a slow decline of species that maybe happens farm field by farm field, or housing development by housing development, or lot with trees cut down by lot with trees cut down, how can you motivate people to be as concerned and take action? It's super simple to say, there are six bald eagles left, and we have a year to turn this around, than it is to say, we're losing habitat slowly.
That's right. And I think, that's when we turn to the science and we say, wow, if it was just one species or two species that were slowly declining, but when we're seeing it so widespread across North America, I think that's really something that we need to look at and say, this is a warning signal from our world. Our world is saying that something is going wrong and we need to really look at it. And when we're looking at all these different habitat types, you know, there's been a lot of focus in Minnesota historically on prairie and grassland restoration and trying to return lands to sort of their more natural state. But we also don't want to drop the ball on making sure that our forests are maintained and we are maintaining high quality habitat. So it's a very complex issue. But I think when we're looking at the science and we're saying, this is a very loud and prominent signal we're getting from all these birds, you know, that's a time for people to think twice about what actions can they take. And it could be as simple as just planting native plants in your yard, or doing things like contributing to conservation agencies like Audubon or American Bird Conservancy that are doing a lot of great work in the state and the and nationally as well.
What do you feel that there is room or necessity for leaning on our lawmakers? This is not a party thing. Leaning on whoever your lawmaker is, whoever you voted for, leaning on your elected officials and saying, you need to make this a priority. Is there merit in that? Is that going to do any good? Or are there more effective ways of trying to get some of these changes implemented or getting people to look at things a different way?
I think that's a great way to enact change. Minnesota, we love the environment. We love our forests. We love our clean lakes. We love our water. And that's a large reason why most of us live here, is because we have all of these wonderful resources at our fingertips, right out our door. And we do rely on a lot of state funding, specifically lottery funding funds a lot of the environmental research that goes on and informs action plans that conserves and restores all of these habitats and wildlife. And, you know, our legislators are stalling a little bit in protecting our environment this year, but it is something that we should definitely raise our voice about and say, this is a priority for us. Please take action and make sure these things continue to be funded.
Another thing which I don't know if it's widespread enough to be significant, and yet it might be, are some of the issues of large swaths of glass that kill birds. Laura talked about it a lot when the Viking Stadium was built. I'm a huge Vikings fan. They're my guys, and yet they broke my heart with their utter indifference to the addition of bird-friendly glass, which would have been such a comparatively small thing. I was walking on campus just a couple of weeks ago and saw my first brown creeper, but he was dead. Oh. And he was by a building with glass that I'm not going to name. But anyway, there he was, and I felt horrible. What about this whole, it seems sometimes as though when environmentalists say, nah, I got to do something different with the glass, nobody's really interested. Or, no, our architect says, or whatever. Are there things that you can do, even if whoever can't afford, for example, if they can't afford to retrofit this building with bird-friendly glass, what are some things perhaps that they could do right here on campus to make it safe for the next brown creeper?
Sure. I mean, that's such a good point. And collisions are more and more development, especially in places like Duluth, where we have huge migration, wasps sort of coming through all of the time, and they're using the parks and the campus and, Park Point and Wisconsin Point as stopover areas to refuel and rest while they continue on their migration to their breeding grounds. They're at high risk for collisions. And you can do things as simple as putting in stickers on the windows so that the birds can see, oh, hang on, this isn't somewhere where I can sort of just fly through. But definitely when we're thinking about developing new buildings or retrofitting new buildings or doing any of those things in the downtown area, it should be something that's on the radar of a lot of our leaders, and we can mitigate the damages, but they do have long-term population effects, and we've seen that with species, and there's a lot of science that points to mitigating. If we mitigate the collisions, we can maybe increase some of the populations during these very vulnerable times associated with migration.
Because that, again, is a human thing. As humans encroach more and more on birds, these collisions are more likely to happen. And of course, as we have learned, that just because the bird, is stunned and he flies away doesn't mean that he doesn't die afterwards. We know a little more about that thanks to Laura than we need to know. Alexis, what are you working on right now that's got you particularly excited?
Well, this is the start of our big field season. We do a lot of work in the breeding season to monitor birds because it's when they're very vocal and easy to count. But also a lot of our research is focusing on breeding females and survival of juveniles, because if we can figure out what they need in terms of habitat and what's causing nest failures or predation on the young, then and figure out ways to mitigate it, then we can overall increase the populations for a lot of bird species. And the ways that we're doing that for some of our focal species is with some new technologies, including GPS tags that birds like sharp-tailed grouse that we're working with in Wisconsin with the Wisconsin DNR and Bayfield County and also the Shawmigan-Nicolet National Forest. We are putting out these GPS tags on birds, and they basically send their locations remotely to the satellites. And so we're sort of tracking them remotely to see where they're moving, where they're going. And we have one on a female right now, and we've been watching her kind of move around during the breeding season. And now she's been a little bit more reduced movement, and we think she's probably nesting. And so we're able to sort of monitor her behavior with some of this technology without going out and bugging her and risking her abandoning the nest. But eventually we'll hope to go out and see if her nest was successful and count the juveniles and maybe tag the juveniles as well to see what habitats they're using. So it's very exciting. There's been a lot of updates and technologies so that we can do this with more and more bird species as they've gotten smaller and smaller. So that's been really fun to learn and to sort of watch these birds remotely.
I love it when new tech can use its powers for good, and suddenly we have the ability to do something or learn something in a way that eliminates all of the bad, like you say, tracking a bird and disturbing them on the nest and perhaps worrying that they'll abandon the nest. And we can use all this new tech to really accomplish some great things. It's an exciting time, I would imagine, to be a scientist, to be a field researcher.
It really is. And I think the impact that we can have is really important. And then combining it with just the technology and the amazing job that I have that we get to interact with all these really cool birds and know all about them is it's wonderful and it's very exciting. And hopefully we can make big strides to conserve the Minnesota's bird diversity for the future.
Well, Alexis, thank you so very, very much for being our guest this morning. It was great to have you with us. And there are a number of local wildlife-related groups that wildlife and bird-related groups that I know of on social media that originate here in the Northland. And so if you want to join all of those and crash those to share your knowledge anytime, I think that would be a great idea.
Awesome. That's great.
Alexis, thanks again for being our guest this morning on Green Visions.
Thank you so much.
Alexis Grindy, Dr. Alexis Grindy, joined us this morning. She is a research program manager, a wildlife ecologist, and she is working with bird populations. She joined us this morning as our guest on Green Visions. Green Visions on KUMD is made possible with support from Heritage Window and Door, the Duluth Superior supplier for renewal by Anderson Windows and Doors, and from Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future.